Hey guys, welcome to the Cloud Computing Weekly Podcast, your one-stop for news, information, and expert advice around the emerging world of cloud computing. This podcast is brought to you by Cloud Technology Partners in partnership with our host, TechTarget. This is episode 7272. My name is Dave Linthicum, Cloud Computing SME, author, speaker, B-List Geek, and with the firm Cloud Technology Partners, a bit of a tongue twister. And joining me is my special guest, Joel, is Dabney, right?
Yeah,
Joel Dabney. Yeah, I got it, man. I've been murdering names all week. So he's with Cloud Nexa.
I always murder your name too, David.
Yeah, so. I know. And that's why I don't feel so bad about it. So he's with Cloud Nexa, which is a very cool company. If you go to cloudnexa.com, and tell us a bit about who you are, where you came from, Joel, and also a bit about Cloud Nexa.
Cloud Nexa is primarily an AWS premier partner. We've been leading the cloud management experience pretty much from our inception. It's a pretty unique organization. We do complete hands-on cloud management in a utility pricing model. Our model is a little bit more expansive than, say, traditional managed service providers. We do some environment builds and some architecture. And, of course, we're managing and optimizing. We also provide a product that's called VNOC, which is a cloud management platform that our customers all use. And all those services are incorporated into our straight management fee, which can go as low as 14% and as high as 20% of customers' monthly AWS spend.
So what's the primary advantage of leveraging you guys to manage AWS on their behalf? And what's typically the reason that they would pick up the phone and give you a call?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, David. It's a pretty good mix, about 50-50 of existing cloud users who are just flat out struggling to achieve the performance or the cost, anticipated cost savings of their plunge into the cloud. And they need help. They just need tweaks. Sometimes environments that were built by themselves or other third parties really weren't built to best practices. They've had trouble keeping up with the deluge of new services that are released, and try to understand how that fits into their environment and should they be looking at it. And about half of our customers kind of fall into that bucket, and the other half are net new cloud users who I'd like to say are smart enough to know that they need help. But the reality is, as you know, a lot of companies just choose not to develop those internal resources. They find it more efficient, less expensive, or just part of their given business model to outsource these services. And so we're brought in early. It's great when that happens because we really get a nice clean slate with those customers and can build environments according to best practices and ensure they're going to have a very positive experience using the cloud.
So I realize you just got out of college a few years ago, through your 20s. But what was your background before you came to Cloud Nexa, or before you founded Cloud Nexa?
Oh, boy. I'm kind of a serial entrepreneur. Way, way back when I got out of college, which is a long time ago, frankly, even longer than you, David. I started out as a hospital administrator. And I did that for a few years, worked for a university hospital, and got the bug at that point to say, hey, I really want to go into business for myself, and started some physical therapy centers and had a nice round with those. Did that, and then I guess in the late 90s, as the whole internet, that thing that we all call the internet, started coming to fruition, a friend of mine told me about this really cool speech recognition software product that was being developed by IBM for healthcare, mainly because we spend so much money on transcription services in healthcare. And this is really pre-electronic medical record days, so everything was still being transcribed and dictated, like the old dictaphones. So I called up the product manager from IBM. I said, hey, I'm really interested in your product. Can I get it? And he's like, no, it's only available for radiologists, and it's only available for hospitals, and it's only available on the server, and all these no-no-nos. And then at the end of the conversation, he says, but you sound like a really good business guy, and we're looking for a VAR for the Mid-Atlantic region to help us sell this stuff. And sorry to be long-winded here, but I'm like, what's a VAR? Because I'm coming from healthcare, right? I don't know what a VAR is. And he's like, oh, you go around and you help customers load software and you sell them professional services. And I'm like, again, coming from healthcare, professional services to me are doctors, right? And I said, well, why do people who are buying software applications need medical services? And they, you know, he gradually explained to me. I was really wet behind the ears. But, you know, a week or two later, I went down to Dallas and was part of an inaugural class of VARs to sell the speech recognition project. And man, I tell you, that was my first foray into technology, and I have not looked back since. I've had three other tech companies, and it's just been a lot of fun. Really, it's been an amazing ride for me.
Well, good. Yeah, it's a long way to go from a hospital administrator to CEO of a startup company.
Well, you know,
not a lot of transferable skill sets, I guess.
Well, you'd be surprised. Managing clinicians and engineers and developers, it's pretty similar. It actually isn't that much different.
Yeah, when I got my first executive job, I realized that I knew a lot more about technology and I knew about managing organizations and people. And it was a huge learning curve you have to go through. And a lot of technical folks do that. And I think it is an advantage to having a leadership position or administrative position and then turn that into technology. Last month, we announced the first print edition of the Doppler, a flagship cloud computing news and best practices publication. It's a 50-plus page executive content, including articles with Avid CIO Jonathan Thomas and Rob Alexander, the CIO of Capital One. And visit cloudtp.com/Doppler to enter your mailing information. That's your snail mail information. We'll send you a copy free of charge. When's the last time you read a paper magazine, Joel?
Probably last year on my birthday when I was in my doctor's office for my annual exam.
Well, we're putting one out, man. You should drop a copy of the Doppler report in there. Coming up, speaking events, and I've been laxed in providing these on the podcast. I'm doing the keynote at Container World 16. That's containers in terms of software containers, like Docker. Not necessarily. If you Google containers, you actually get a bunch of jar manufacturers up, which is kind of funny. Which is February 16th through the 18th, Santa Clara Convention Center out in Silicon Valley. If you're out there, you can come see what I look like in person. And Structured Data 2016, March 9th through the 10th, San Francisco. Learned about the new trends in data and cloud-based data and big data systems, and a lot of that new stuff will start propping up. So come out and see me. I'd love to meet you guys in person and talk shop. Tell me what you're doing in the world of cloud computing. So topics, we got two pricing kinds of things that are going on. So Microsoft new cloud price cuts benefit top-tier customers most. Microsoft's since cut cost for its popular instance type on Azure, but steepest discounts go to those who purchase an enterprise service agreement. So competitive cost cutting between clouds come in cycles, and it seems that Amazon and Microsoft have ushered into a new phrase right after Amazon unveiled its new reserve instances type, which is clearly focused at large enterprises. We're seeing those a lot. Microsoft since priced a slew of virtual machines on Microsoft Azure. Even steeper discounts are available on top of that for enterprise agreement customers only. So what's happening, Joel, is that both Microsoft and AWS realize that there's gold in them that are enterprises. They really didn't discount much in the past, but now they're providing deep discounts if enterprises are willing to make multi-million dollar commitments to them. And so AWS is doing this with the reserve instances, and we're pricing those into TCO models right now with some of our larger enterprise customers. And then Microsoft is, in essence, following suit with the same sort of stuff. So are we leaving the SMBs behind? Are we not providing them with as much of an incentive to move into the cloud as it was before? And are we treating the enterprises differently? And is it fair that we do that? And is it a good business decision for these guys? Enlighten me.
That's a lot in that one little statement there. As far as the Azure pricing strategy, I'm not a big fan of the big EA deals. I'd rather see utility pricing. I think it makes sense on a lot of different levels. I mean, look, you're going to have workloads that are predictable, and yes, those RAs make sense. And of course, you're going to advocate for your customer to acquire those reserved instances. But I think you're also looking at customers who are going to have a hybrid environment, so to speak, and almost all of our customers have reserved instances and on-demand instances, simply because the business is just not that predictable. At least that's what we see. And I'll tell you, we do a lot of government work. We're working on a bid right now that's due tomorrow, and we've been going back and forth with the contracting agent, officer rather, and you know, there's no RIs requested, and we keep saying, well, geez, you know, you're the government, you know what your workloads are. You really should be getting these RIs because we can, you know, help you and the government save a lot of money. And there's a reluctance for whatever reason. You know, maybe it's the uncertainty of the uncertainty. Yeah, I mean, you know, the RIs for the enterprises who can really spend the money, it's a wonderful thing for them. I don't think that that means that it's at the detriment of the SMBs, which is the majority of customers that we work with. Within AWS, there's so many options for RI acquisition that, you know, pretty much any SMB can tap into that. And, you know, you also have a scale issue. Of course, if you're buying, you know, $1 million+ a month in anything, you're going to drive a much better deal. I don't think any SMB is going to feel like they're getting a bad deal because somebody's able to get it at a better price because of the volume purchasing. And we, you know, we just, you know, here's a little bit of a news update. Hasn't been officially announced yet, but we've seen increasing demand for Azure services, although we've not delivered any Azure managed services. But we've started speaking with the Microsoft team. We've actually executed a CSP agreement with them. And I would say, you know, sometime in this year, probably the end of Q2 into Q3, we'll actually start being in a position to manage Azure workloads. It's a big difference. It's a world of difference between the two platforms, as you know, David. So we're not anxious to take on workloads that we can't do a really good job with. Our customer satisfaction scores on our Amazon platform is through the roof. We've had, I think, 3 consecutive months of 100% customer satisfaction. And that's something that we know could be the death of a managed service company if those scores start to drop. So we're not anxious to jump into the Azure world and have unhappy customers.
Yeah, I think it makes sense to kind of focus. And obviously, AWS is the 800-pound gorilla in the room, and people are standing up those services and looking for MSPs to do that. And it looks like they're providing discounts as well. So this is Azure, Microsoft actually just kind of reacting to the actions of AWS, which pretty much the cloud industry does. So every time AWS makes a move, everybody aligns quickly with what they're moving toward.
Yeah, and you know, you get into what's the real driver for the adoption. And you know, it's been talked about ad nauseum, but you know, is it cost? Is it just this is the new development platform? Is it the friends don't let friends build data centers? Is it you're out of space? Is it underutilization? You know, Jeff Barr had a blog, I think late last year on, I think it's something like a 77% reduction in server usage when they move from a data center to the cloud. I don't know if you saw that that piece. So there's a lot of drivers for it. I'm not sure that cost is the number one driver anymore. And when you see these price cuts from the big providers, a lot of it, I think, reflects the fact that they're coming out with new servers and new technology and, you know, almost like a software vendor in years past with sunset versions, you could almost look at the cloud vendors looking at their older instance types and say, okay, well, you know, there's new technology. We're going to start moving this stuff down the pile and try to get people onto the newer server version. So, you know, I don't think that the pricing alone is really driving that much behavior. And to add one more point to that, we've studied customers of ours. We have over 600 customers. We've studied customer who were with us pre and post price cut on AWS. And while our total revenue will drop in a month of a price cut, obviously, and maybe for a month after that, the net effect is actually customers will consume more because the solutions become more palatable. I mean, let's face it, you make a decision to go onto the cloud and you've budgeted it out, and then all of a sudden you've gotten a 20%
price cut, and you say, hey, that was a good decision, right? So let's see what else we can put on there. So I think the price cuts are really just part of the story and not really the main driver, though, for why people are adopting.
Yeah, we're seeing that as well, but you have to do these, you know, huge TCO reports in terms of what the total cost of ownership is going to be, and kind of model the pricing in terms of how it's relative to the existing cost structure. And normally it's very difficult to put in the soft costs, such as, you know, the value of agility and time to market and all the reasons why we're moving into cloud computing. So I think they're sensitive to a certain point, but they're not.
But that's where I think you're right on the money there, where you're at a big enterprise and you're saying, okay, I've got this monster legacy app that needs to be modernized. I'm going to go engage cloud technology partners and we're going to rebuild this app. And I'm going to offset that by making a pre-purchase so that I can really drive down my total cost, effectively paying the cost of the app modernization fee. That's where some of those economies really seem to make sense.
Yeah, and AWS when reserved instances, and you know, also leveraging MSPs and to kind of abstract you from having to deal with the complexities of the underlying system. And there's a huge value in doing that that we're seeing. Many people are opting for that approach. And it's like everything else you deal with in the enterprise, everything's cost driven. They're trying to basically maximize the value that they can get out of this. And the price reductions that are more attractive to the enterprises drive behaviors because it kind of gets below a cost threshold that they can sign up to. And it's funny, it's like a VP in an enterprise, you know, has a signing authority, say up to $1 million. And lo and behold, you know, these reserve instances, when you price them out over a 3-year period of time, they come out to $1 million. So that it gets people off the fence and, you know, gets them into the cloud game because we're not necessarily pushing a lot of money toward that. There's a reduction in cost benefit that they see maybe 2 or 3 years out, and certainly a value to the business in terms of agility and, you know, time to market and all that stuff is in there. So it's just so compelling. I mean, we've had Jeff on the podcast before, and I think 70% is probably a little aggressive based on what we're seeing, but it's definitely almost always going to be the case that if the application is indeed portable, not everyone is, that it makes sense to rehost that on a cloud platform, and you're going to almost always get off with a lower reduction in costs, and they're just making that story more compelling.
Well, you know, there's one other kind of unsung hero in this process, and again, maybe we see it, but the finance folks, the business folks who, you know, when they were paying for the data center and it was, you know, kind of chunky, right? You'd buy the servers, you'd stroke the check for that, and you'd stroke the electric check, and you understood all that. But now when the finance guys are getting these bills, you know, I think for the first time they feel empowered. They're asking questions like, well, you know, why did we spend more hours on servers this month? And who authorized them? So it's giving everybody in the business a lot more control and understanding of how these compute resources are being utilized and spent and where the money's going. So overall, it's a great thing. If I were on the other side of the fence and I were a consumer of cloud for a large company, I'd be sleeping a lot better at night.
Yeah.
And not even talking about the benefits from the security and the availability and all that stuff, just the fact I could understand the true cost of it.
Yeah, that's where utility pricing becomes a little bit scary for enterprises because they're concerned that, you know, suddenly their need is going to become fairly elastic and people can reserve provision as many instances of servers as they need. And suddenly the bill's $10 million. And so they're trying to put restrictions and limits on that. And there obviously is limits you can place on the use of cloud services and monitor your bill and things like that. But I think Azure and Google as well, and actually Amazon, I got another story about that we're about to go through, is in essence seeing that. And they're starting to basically adjust to how enterprises, the people who pay the bill bucks, want to consume stuff. And it's a matter of they like to pre-buy. If you remember the enterprise license agreements, ELAs from, you know, years ago when I was, you know, in the EII space and building integration servers, we were selling a ton of stuff on that. And that's basically like an all-you-can-eat license, you know, that you get for a couple of $1 million a year for anything that, you know, we sell. And it's basically the same sort of thing here. I wouldn't say it's all you can eat, but certainly they're going to provide you the best bang for the buck, but you're going to have to put out the money ahead of time, which is okay for enterprises.
Well, maybe you just invented the new cloud model that somebody's going to develop that an all-you-can-drink cloud model that's going to come up and challenge the incumbents. That would certainly be an interesting model. The space is ripe for innovation. We're all innovating in it, and we're all finding new benefits to it. And I think the cost and the pricing is a piece of it for sure.
So anyway, final story, and this is probably down along the same lines, so we're not going to spend as much time on this one. But in a new twist, Amazon has again repackaged and repriced its services, this time allowing Amazon EC2 instances to be treated as if they were scheduled jobs, up to 10% off Amazon's usual prices. So the SRI, Scheduled Reserve Instances, a lot of acronyms are starting to build in this cloud world, allows customers to reserve capacity on a recurring basis with daily, weekly, or monthly schedules over the course of 1 year term, according to the blog post announcing the new feature. So what they're doing is saying that we have reserved instances, which means capacity that you own and you can leverage as you need it. And we're going to, in essence, charge you a static cost for that. But we have scheduled reserve instances. So if I'm running large batch jobs on a weekly basis, instead of reserving instances and holding that capacity just for use on, say, Friday afternoon when I'm closing my accounts up, I can go ahead and schedule reserve instances and get a 10% lower cost associated with that. So there's, of course, we're tasked with doing these total cost of ownership reports, and mind blown, we have to put another dynamic, instance of that. So is there opportunities to save money and things like that? So pricing gets either more complex or more simple, or, are we going to have like, 200 different pricing models depending on the organization and who you are. And it's, we're going to have to call through that as a consulting firm to, kind of figure out what's best for our clients. Life going to get easier anytime soon?
It's complicated. We have a lot of deep, thoughtful discussions with customers about pricing options already. It's complicated. I think, as VNOC, we have some capabilities in terms of pricing models within the tool, and this is another thing that we have to address. It is for very specialized customers. I can think of a few that we've had that would benefit from this. Anybody, like, for example, we have this one large payroll customer, and their processing is very predictable on a weekly basis. And I'm sure there's plenty of other examples where, you've got a part-time process that's running for a short period of time, and that's it. There'll be use cases for this, but I think it speaks to Amazon's leadership in the market. They're just trying to continue to give customers options for how they can best consume to fit their business. It's very consistent with Andy Jassy's message, consistent messaging about we want to give customers what they want and let the market decide ultimately what the best solution is for them. It's kind of the opposite of what IT consumers have had in previous generations of technology. I mean, there used to be expression, in the automobile industry about, American versus German cars, and the German manufacturers would, basically say, well, you'll take what we get because we know what's right for you. And the Americans are always building for the entertainment factor. And, I think very much so with AWS, they're innovating to try to find new ways to touch customers and not provide a one size fit all. We're not going to say this is what's right for you and this is what you have to take. So we'll have some customers that use it for sure.
Yeah, I think it's going to get complex, and then it's going to normalize. I think they're going to realize the pricing models that people aren't employing and start removing those off the catalog. So I think these are trial balloons, many instances, to see if they can get some enterprises off the fence with compelling pricing. And so the, buy now, we'll give you a huge discount later is a good way to kind of lock in a customer. And so we see that in consulting, we see that in cloud services, we see that in software. And basically,
that's our whole business model, right? We have a very innovative business model as well. So we're always looking for ways to tweak it and make it reach a wider market.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll keep a track on this space. So anyway, Please pick up a copy of my book, Cloud Computing and Silicon Convergence, which you can find in softback on Amazon as well as a Kindle. Read my blog on InfoWorld, and don't forget to go to www.cloudtp.com for current news, links to this podcast, and more ways to contact us directly. Twitter, as always, I'm at David Linthicum, LinthicuM. Joel, do you Twitter?
I do.
Where can we find you?
Wugenegger.
How do you spell that?
Wuggenegger. Wuggenegger.
Where can we find more details on CloudNexa?
Visit us on the web at cloudnexa.com, and also check out our vnoc.io website, which is a deeper dive into our vnoc product.
Yeah, take a look at that. MSPs are more of a popular option going forward for good reason, as I've written and spoke about many times. So anyway, check out what Joel has to offer. Also, please make sure to support our host, TechTarget. Make sure to read my content there, as well as some great research, reporting, and events. Please go to searchcloudcomputing.techtarget.com. So until next time, best of luck in building your cloud computing solutions. We'll be back next week. You guys take good care. Stay warm.